This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. From Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist, here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, I hope that you're firmly adhered to your seat right now, because you'll want to stay locked and loaded for wall-to-wall information from Douglas County's informed source when it comes to dirt. Soil, yards, lawns, gardens. He has been dubbed, knighted, and so ordered to be the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters.
Yeah, not by me. I don't know which one of you you dudes made that up years ago. But
It's on a legal document somewhere.
I know, and I find that most of Douglas County is aware of that, and when they come into the nursery, say, "Oh yeah, you're the guy on the radio, the Commissioner of Dirt." I say, "Yeah, I am. I am he." Anyway, thank you for listening today. It's a beautiful, beautiful day.
You can pay me for the introduction later.
Okay, I will. Did you want your usual $2, or you want a raise?
Don't tell people that.
Oh, okay. Anyway, if you have a question about your garden, your landscaping, or your sprinkler system, your lawn, or the weeds, you can call me at 673-4464. That's 673-4464.
All right, here's a question.
Oh, wow, not you.
Well, okay, but I'm standing here, and I just thought of something.
Okay.
I'm naturally inquisitive. After the rain on Saturday, we got over an inch of rain.
Yeah.
I mowed the lawn on Sunday.
Yeah.
Should I have watered on Monday?
Sure, why not?
Well, but we just got an inch of rain.
Yeah, but that inch of rain probably didn't penetrate more than an inch or two into the soil. And if you would have watered, it would have increased your soil moisture just a little bit more, and then you could have slacked off for, you know, 4 or 5 days. But, you know, an inch of rain is good, and I'm happy for it because it does some good. But an inch of rain, actually, to penetrate, you need about 3 or 4 inches, you know, over a period of 3 or 4 days. And then you can knock off on the watering for, oh, gosh, a week or two.
Okay. Well, I didn't water, and I actually started to, because I like to water right after I finish mowing.
Well, sure, and that's good.
Because I like that look.
It's good, yes. Yes, it's sparkly, and your lawn's nice and brown, and you want to spoof it up. I've been by your house. I know. I know what your lawn looks like.
There you go. All right.
I'm just kidding.
So I've asked my question. If you have your 673-4464.
Yeah, and the purpose of this show is to help gardeners like Mr. Kyle here, and get him on the right track and hopefully keep him there. A couple of things I wanted to mention to you, however. I think this morning, if not this morning, yesterday morning, you mentioned something about I have been on the radio show here for over a decade. I actually started in 2003. That's 17 years.
Well, it's over a decade.
Yeah, truly it is. But, you know, just so you get your numbers correct, I'm shocked that I'm still here. I'm shocked that...
Was it really 2003?
2003.
How do you know?
Because I just got out of the commissioner's office. That, you know, 2002 was the end of my term. So my wife and I were headed to Eugene for some plants. We walked into Casey's restaurant. Good place. To get some breakfast, and Pat Markham was sitting there eating breakfast. And I said, "Hi, Pat." He says, "Hi, Mike." I said, "Hey, how come you never have a gardening show on your radio station?" He looked at me and says, "Well, make me a proposal." I says, "Oh, okay." So we went merrily on our way. And about 3 or 4 days later, I get a phone call from Pat. "Have you got my proposal ready?" I says, "I'll be there at 3 o'clock with it." And I sat down. I thought, how do I make a proposal for a radio show? I had no clue. So I wrote it all out, and I came in later that afternoon, and I handed it to him. He looked at it and said, "Yeah, that looks good. You know, how about, I don't know, it's Wednesday or Thursday. How about that?" I said, that's great. Start next week." I went, "Oh, dear. Okay." Been here ever since.
Wow. So that actually precedes News Radio 1240 KQEN being a full-time news talk station.
Yeah.
Because that came later, but we were beginning to do these local shows.
Yep.
I think our time frame may not have been 4 o'clock then, but maybe it was.
I think
that evolved a couple times going way back.
And the days have changed throughout the years. But here I are, and it's been 17 years.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I said. Wow.
A lawn and garden show that lasts more, lasts longer than many marriages. I mean, that says something right there.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Your illustrations are something to be admired.
I don't have a counseling degree for
that's
obvious
good.
Reasons.
Well, you know, the show is to help folks landscape their yard correctly, take care of their lawn correctly, to give helpful information, because a lot of this helpful information I've given over the years, it's because of mistakes I made in my professional life that I had to correct and get the get the right thing done. And there hasn't been a lot of them, but it's always a learning process, because there's always new and different plants coming onto the scene, new techniques, new equipment, new ways of doing things. And each time that occurs, I have a learning curve to get over and see if I can do that professionally and efficiently. And it's always a learning thing. You never stop learning in the landscaping and the nursery industry, because there's always new products, there's always new techniques, and we like to be at the top of the heap if we can, and usually we are. So today, though, I have kind of a split show. On one part of it, I was going to give a kind of a travelogue thing. I mean, a lot of people have been locked up in their homes. They haven't gotten out. They haven't really gone anywhere. But with this good weather, you know, it's time to get out and go for a ride or something. Look around, see what's happening. Get out of town, get out of the house. And so I was thinking about what kind of travelogue kind of deal could I make? And so I just flash back on my own experiences and thinking, well, you know, Douglas County is like one of the most beautiful counties I've ever lived in, period. I mean, I've lived in a lot of different places, and Douglas County is just top of the line for its weather, for its color, for its vibrance, for its activity. All that is good. I love this place. I've been here since, I came here in March of 1965 as a 17-year-old, And after I got out of the Marine Corps, I came back here with a wife and a child. So I chose this place, and so did my wife, too. But, you know, this spring and this early summer, it's just an amazing time. You know, late summer can be hot, but this time of year, it's like 76 degrees out there right now, and there's a few clouds out and a little bit of breeze, and everything is lush. It's green. It's looking good. And even in the mountains, even outside of town, out there in all the different directions that we can go, there's a number of parks to enjoy in every direction and every elevation, every kind of geographical formation. And within a few miles of Roseburg, we can fish, we can picnic, we can camp, you know, or just sit and relax and look at a river or look at a lake or just look at trees. And if you're new to our area, or if you haven't visited this place lately, then you're kind of missing out. And one of the coolest little parks, and we have many, I think we have 52 or 62 county parks, and I can't remember from my commissioner days, but that's pretty close. But one of my favorites is Amaker Park, because it's right down the road, and it's right on the North Umpqua. It's easy to get to, and it's not really what you would call a busy place. A lot of times in the summer, there's a few campers in there that overnight or a week or whatever. But for the most part, the Amaker Park is pretty low-key. It doesn't have a lot of outside amusements, if you will. And all it has is the North Umpqua River and the most beautiful forest of myrtle trees that you've ever seen. And the forest of myrtle trees, it's at the far east end of the park. You got to kind of go through all the way to the last little parking lot. But that's where they begin. Now, myrtle trees are, you know, they're very special. It's a different kind of tree. And there's only two places in the entire world that have the numbers of myrtle trees that are in existence. And one place here is Douglas County. And it's amazing how many groves of myrtles we have, and it's just a really nice thing. But you walk through this myrtlewood forest, and you're totally in a different world. I mean, it has a lot of those trees are several hundred years old. I mean, they're just huge. And on a hot summer day, it's at least 10 degrees cooler in the grove, and not too many people around, so it's very, very quiet. It's a good place to sit and get your head together while you look at the North Umpqua kind of rolling by. It's different. It's different from a Douglas fir forest or an oak forest or anything like that, which are beautiful in their own ways. But this myrtlewood thing, there's hardly any sun gets down through, so there's not much vegetation underneath, like weeds or different types of plants, because of the total shade. And the myrtle tree, when the leaves drop, it's not what you call conducive to plant growth. There's some kind of chemical in the leaves themselves as they break down, especially over years and years and years, that not too many other plants will grow easily in there. But if you don't like the cool and shady area, there's plenty of open space at Amaker, too, to soak up the sun or play softball or fish on the North Umpqua River. I mean, this place is good. And if you need a change of scenery that is really close to Roseburg, and you just want to, quote, get out of town, but you only want to go 6 miles, Amaker Park is just a number one place to start. We've got a lot of beautiful parks, but this one, I don't know, I picked this one out. I've been to all of them. Years ago, I was on the county parks board and visited them all and seen them, well, probably seen almost everyone, but Amaker kind of sticks out in my mind as this is really cool. Now, if you want to see...
other thing it has that it probably might be the only one in the county.
What's that?
That has a freeway running through it.
Absolutely, right over the top, and a train, and a train right before you go. And but you know, once you get back to the back part of the park, you don't hear any of that because of the vegetation and because of the trees. It's very, very quiet, very solemn, very uplifting place, actually.
And I've noticed even when we've been down there for things before, that in the absence of a lot of traffic. You really don't notice, especially if it's not trucks, you don't notice a lot of the traffic when you're right down in the water or next to it.
Right. Exactly. Now, if you're inclined to see more of the river, here's the deal. Get an inner tube or some other floating device and ride the rapids down to like Hessness Landing. I've done that. Or River Forks Park. I've done that as well. And it's about like a two-hour ride down to River Forks. It depends on how high the river is or how quickly it's moving. But you want to make sure that you have a lot of sunscreen when you do that, because about halfway down there's a quiet stretch that you know of. It's called Sunburn Alley, and believe me, it lives up to its name. So that's why you want to have that sunscreen smeared all over your face and your arms and your legs, or you're going to come out like a lobster.
You know how many times I've floated that section?
No.
Once.
I've done it twice in all the years.
Yeah, first year we were probably married. There were some folks that we were around then that had some rafts, and we went with them and did all that. But I also don't swim, and so that's a little problematic, with a life vest.
You don't know how to swim?
I am not. I've really never mastered that.
Really?
Haven't tried for a long time. Hmm. It was actually when I lived here the first time, and we lived out by the fairgrounds. My father, who was swimming, was like one of his exercises his whole life, decided the best approach at age 2.5 or 3 was to pick me up and throw me in the South Umpqua River right off of Portland Avenue.
Oh, goodness.
That didn't work so well.
Didn't your dad like you?
He did, but I apparently there were some heated remarks later between my parents.
I bet.
As to the wisdom of that particular method. And I honestly, it was a little, at a young age, I don't know, but I know that even later as I grew up, I'm like, I don't want to go swimming because when I was a little kid, this thing happened here.
I don't want to go with my dad, that's for sure.
It was a little traumatic. So anyway, we'll be back with more in a moment.
Yeah, we will.
420 on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show, 673-4464. Back in 2 minutes on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240, KQEN.
Oh, keep your radio on. Go to 541radio.com, 541 Radio app, however you access this around the Fruited Plain.
Yeah.
And beyond.
And beyond, of course.
We're glad to have you listening. The weekly visit with the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters.
And I'm kind of doing a little bit of a relaxing travelogue for you folks that might have been cooped up for the last 2 or 3 months that need to get out and see what our beautiful county has for us and how it can, you know, actually take away all the bad stuff and fill you with good stuff and good thoughts and a more positive attitude than what's displayed in the media sometimes. And I've got one of the media kings standing right beside me here.
Oh, boy.
And I'm not pointing any fingers at Mr. Kyle.
Okay.
Yeah. But, you know, I was talking about Amaker and the park and the Myrtlewood Grove, which is probably one of the most significant ones in Douglas County, but even in maybe southern Oregon. I haven't seen too many that have matched it in numbers of trees or actual size. It's probably at least an acre, maybe an acre and a half. But it's just a neat place to see and to go and to view the river and just, you know, get your head together and get it out of this virus thing. And, you know, our parks, one thing about our parks, they're safe, they're clean, they're well-maintained by the Douglas County Parks Department. And, you know, several of them have very nice playgrounds, lots of picnic tables, and even showers in case you are so led to take one. Now, in the National Forest, we have very nice parks as well. Up the North Umpqua, you're up there in Big Timber country, and you've got these big, beautiful Douglas fir forests mixed with dogwood, vine maple, rhododendrons. A lot of diverse plant materials are all through that timber. And when I speak a lot about these kinds of, like the dogwoods, vine maple, rhodies, and how they grow wild up in these areas without human care, you know, they survive significant snows, they survive heat, they survive not being watered or fertilized, yet they look really great. And over the years, as I've gone up, you get up around Tokadee area and you begin to see a lot of very large vine maple, and it's really a good landscape tree. It grows at the coast, it grows at high elevation, it grows in Douglas County. It's a good tree, it's a good shrub tree, if you will, to have in your yard, as are the rhodies, as are the dogwoods. And again, they're very, very tough plants. You can't go wrong with them except when you overwater them or over fertilize them. But that's what you see up that up the North Umpqua, up in the National Forest. And waterfalls are the highlights of most of these parks. One of my favorites is Watson Falls, and it's and I'm not sure of the measurement, but I'm going to say it's several hundred feet tall. And there's a trail to the top. Been there, done that. And there are also pools at the bottom where, on a hot summer day, you can stand under the falls and really get cooled off, and it's more than refreshing. It's downright cold, even in the middle of August. I mean, it's cold water. And and you can drive right to the base of the falls and park in the parking lot. There are restrooms there that are available. And it's just a magnificent place to look. Again, it's, like I say, maybe it's not several hundred. I know it's over 100 feet. It might be 189 feet or something. I'm not quite sure. But it is something to behold, summer or winter. Even when it's, if you can get in there in the middle of December when it's maybe not too much snow, and you can see how much, what the water volume is falling over that thing down below, you wonder how in the world does that the rocks and everything stay in one place. But my final park, and I'm trying to divvy up the county here, And I think it is my favorite park. It's Crater Lake National Park. If you've never been to Crater Lake National Park, you're just missing a whole bunch of life. I've been there at least 30 times over my span here in Roseburg, maybe even more. Anytime a relative would come from, my in-laws live in the Reno, Nevada, Sparks, Nevada, you know, area where it's, you know, basically desert, basically sagebrush and that kind of thing. So when they came to visit, hey, want to go for a ride? Sure, let's go. And so I go up to North Umpqua and they're just awestruck by how beautiful the whole thing is. And I said, you ain't seen nothing yet. And we enter Crater Lake and you kind of go in through there and you come up over that last rise where the first parking lot is and you kind of pull right up to the wall and bingo, there it is. And there's the lake. There's Wizard Island right in front of you. And they're at a total loss for words because most of them never seen anything like that. Most of them they heard of it, but you know, hey, well, you know, Crater Lake, big deal. Well, it is a very big deal. It's an amazing, amazing thing. And when you look at the history of it and how supposedly it was created and how Mount Mazama blew up and those kinds of things, there's some good information there. But the first glimpse of the lake is a real thrill if you've never been there. And the Rim Drive is worth the time that it takes with a lot of turnouts to view the lake from different perspectives. And you can even hike down to the lake via the Cleetwood Trail, which is about halfway around, a couple of miles, and put your feet in the water. That will quickly freeze your toes right off, I mean, even in the middle of August again. And my sons, both of them, when they were, 16, 15, 16, 17, we'd hike down there and they'd actually dive off the rocks into the water and come up howling because of the shock of the coldness. And they didn't stay in it very long, just maybe 30, 40 seconds, and they're back on the rocks trying to warm up and get the blood going again. And the last really cool thing about Crater Lake, and I'm just hitting some highlights. This is nothing compared to, you could spend weeks there and discover this place. But the boat ride, you go down the Cleetwood Trail, that's where you catch the boat, and it drives you around the lake and gives you a real different look at the size of the lake and the scale of the caldera and the steepness of the slope, which is, 700 feet above you as you're in this little tiny boat cruising around this 1,900-foot deep lake. it's like, whoa. And then they stop at Wizard Island. And you can get out and explore the island. And they when I did it, they said, well, if you want to explore for an hour or two, don't worry. You can catch one of the next boats that come by and they'll bring you back. So, this is well worth the time. So that's just a way to, just get out. Enjoy Douglas County for what it is and forget about your yard for a while. But maybe while you're looking around at some of the stuff up there, some of the plants and some of the rock formations, water sources and things like that, you get some ideas about, hey, maybe I can recreate this in my backyard. Well, to a certain extent, you can. It would be on a very minuscule scale, kind of very dwarfed, but yeah, you can repeat. And that's where, over the years, I've gotten a lot of my design ideas. And when I want to create, if there's someone who has that kind of interest, a client that has that kind of interest, I can look back on places that I've been all the way through Douglas County. And I've been to literally almost every waterfall in Douglas County. There's very few I have not seen, visited, hiked to, and walked around in and got wet at. but looking at the rock formations that surround the water, looking at the plant materials that are growing seemingly out of no soil but out of rock that hang over the pools and things like that, the ferns, the different vegetation, that's in a different elevation. Yeah, it's probably pretty much shady, but you can replicate some of that in your own backyard. You can, or your front yard if you like, but the backyard is a private place. The backyard is where you kind of hang out, and relax and just kind of you know, you can throw all your troubles away and say, yeah, I remember when I was at Watson Falls and I saw this and this, and this is my miniature waterfall, and I like the sound, and here's the rocks, and, you know, it just goes on. When I was, way back when I was first starting my business, me and the family would go on rides up. I'd find a logging road and say, yeah, let's see where this thing goes, and we'd drive up there. And for about, we knew someday we were going to build a house. And I knew that I wanted a rock fireplace. And so consequently, every time we went somewhere and we were up in the middle of nothing and we saw a batch of pretty rocks, we'd throw a few in the back of the pickup. And we did that for, oh gosh, 3 or 4 years. And actually, it amounted to about 16 pickup loads of rock over that time. And we'd picnic, we'd wander around, hike, and we didn't destroy anything. We just picked up, well, that's a pretty rock. Let's put that in there. So when we did build our house, our fireplace is made out of all the rocks that we collected over all the years. And my kids were, you know, highly involved in that. Oh, wow, Dad, this is a cool rock. Let's take that one. And I'd say, well, that's a little bit too big, or that's a little bit too small. But, you know, we did the family collect the rocks for the fireplace in the future thing. And we did it exploring the North Umpqua. We did it exploring all the different roads that are available to doesn't have to have a four-wheel drive. You can just, you know, normal pickup, even though I used to have a 57 Chevy that we take up in some of those places. So
But I pressed that button over there. Yep. Did you? You had a 57 Chevy.
I did.
That's what I drove in high school.
Yeah. Well, that's what I, well, my brother-in-law sold it to us when I was in the Marine Corps, and that's what my wife drove when she was going to nursing school in Reno. And so when I got home, there was my 57 Chevy, and we got caught in the very first Graffiti Days parade, and I didn't know what it was. Remember the A&W that used to be on the corner out there?
See, it wasn't there when I came.
Really?
No.
Well, we're having ice cream floats one evening. And I think it was a Friday or a Saturday night, and I see all these cars all lined up. I thought, wow, this is a traffic jam. And then I looked again; they're really old cars, shiny old cars, and stuff like that. So we finally backed out and got into the line. Somebody let me in, and it took from there to the freeway. It probably took 20 minutes or so to get there. And there were people standing on the sidewalks waving at us. And I'm thinking, what in the world is this? I didn't know it was Graffiti Days.
Well, people looked at you and went, look, it's the Commissioner of Dirt.
Yes. Oh, man. All right. That's enough of my travel log. We'll get into roses in the next segment.
When we come back, 4:35. Thanks for being here this afternoon. Mike Witter's Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
The Afternoon Report with Douglas County's news team is coming up. There's so many news stories. We'll see if we can get them all in. Everything always at 541radio.com, the 541 Radio app, and the KQEN Facebook page as well. But we roll on with the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show, now turning things rosy.
Yeah, we'll turn them around a little bit. But, you know, that first part, I just wanted to encourage people to look around our county and just contemplate the beauty that we live in, and you know, versus Portland or Seattle or L.A. or any of those places. We live in a very beautiful place. We're blessed with where we live. So, you know, just look at it. So the second section here is I'm going to talk about roses, simply because everywhere you look in Roseburg, there are roses blooming everywhere, and they're gorgeous. They're absolutely nuts and insane, and a lot of them are not taken care of. In other words, they're not. I saw a 10-foot rose bush today as I was driving around. 10-foot rose bush, and it was kind of very few leaves at the bottom, say the bottom 3-4 feet, but the next 6 feet were full of leaves, and the roses were just outrageous. I mean, they were just, you know, huge, and there was hundreds of them, big. I don't know what kind of rose it was. There's so many kinds of roses. I I'm not good on names of roses. I'm just good on color, and I like that color or I like this color. But everywhere you drive, you just see a lot of roses here in Roseburg. And I know that has nothing to do with the name of Roseburg, but Aaron Rose is where Roseburg got its name. But it's a great place to grow roses. They're a good, tough plant. They're one of the toughest plants you can grow. I have told stories on this show in previous years about, my first house in Roseburg, where I had about 100,000 roses growing all over on top of the house and everywhere else. And it took me two or three or four years to clear all that stuff out. But some of them were so huge, and they were... Oh gosh, parts of the bottoms look deader than a doornail, but you look up on top because they were crawling on the roof. They were climbers. And there'd be roses all over my roof, right on top of this old roof. And I had a rose hedge that I tried to kill, and all he did was make it better. But, roses, they're like I say, they're one of the toughest plants and one of the most beautiful and prolific shrubs here in our county, period. That's the bottom line. You know, they grow on the coast, where it's wet, windy, and cool. They grow in the desert, where it's hot, dry, and windy. And then they love to grow right here in Douglas County. And if you can't grow a rose, there's something wrong. So my goal today is to help you grow roses and enjoy what roses can bring. And I've got some favorites, and I'm not going to go into a whole bunch of different types of roses, but I'll tell you about a few. But roses have been around, oh gosh, since time began. I mean, roses were growing wild all over the earth, and so they had to be tough. I mean, it's amazing how tough they are. And the rose culture began sometime in the early 1800s when people started to pay attention to the wild roses that were around. There weren't too many nurseries available. There were no, Freddy's or Costco's or any of that that sold roses. So they had to see what nature gave them and maybe try to improve on them. And then that's what mankind did. They began to experimenting with these roses. And as a result, larger and more colorful flowers began to appear. I mean, you had these guys way back when, and said, well, I wonder if I took the pollen out of this one here and mixed it with the pollen over on this one here, what would I get? And that's where all the scientific experimentation began way back when, because there were very curious people in the 1800s, just as they are now, and they were bent on improving their surroundings. They were bent on, how do I make this better? And I think that's a great frame of mind to live in, is how do I make this situation better, be it roses or anything else that might be current events. And at any rate, you know, they kind of did some of these different roses by their switching pollens around, and maybe some of them took cuttings. I don't know what they did back in then. There's no no word on how they actually did it, I'm guessing. But as a result of their experimentation, we have today larger and more colorful flowers, and they began to appear way back then. And large roses and small roses of all kinds were, like I say, created by cross-pollination and probably grafting. I'm sure that there was probably some bright guy or woman that said, hey, how about if I cut this slip off and try to insert it into this one? I wonder if it will grow. And that's where great things come. When you try something, try an experiment, try it more than once, try it several times until you have success. And like I say, the net result today is we have hundreds and hundreds of different types of roses in our country and all over the world. And you know, it's kind of interesting, every country on earth had roses, and those early explorers and the sailors that were on ships that brought goods from, say, the United States to England, or the United States to Africa, or wherever they floated around on the globe back in them days, you know, some of these sailors were plant nuts too, and they would see a plant and they would you know, a rose or a tree or whatever that would intrigue them that they had never seen before. And they collected samples of roses and brought them home to America and tried them out here. Hey, look what I got, honey, over in East Somalia or wherever they might have been, or Scotland. This is called a rose, and I want to see if it'll grow here in the States, in Virginia or San Francisco or New Orleans, you know, one of those places. And they did. And it's amazing the variety that, and plus we had our homegrown wild stuff, and that's when you get a rose of this type and a rose of this type and say, hey, can we combine the pollen from both of these and see if we can come up with a different type of rose. And that's exactly how the process, that's a very simplified explanation of hybridization, if you will. Very simple. But also when they quote invented these new types of roses, you always had the bees and the birds and other insects which pollinized from one variety to the next. They carried the pollen from one flower to the next, and that also created new colors, new sizes, new growth habits, and until probably the late 1800s, maybe the early 1900s, nurseries were not on every corner, and of course there were no Walmarts, and there were no Freddy's, and there were no Costco's and things like that, so you couldn't just run down the street and buy them. You had to make them, and there was probably a few entrepreneurial types that, oh, they probably grew, you know, 30 or 40 or 100 of them and kind of had them displayed in their yard. People would walk by and say, oh, my goodness gracious, what is that? And the inventor would say, well, that's a XYZ rose, and the origin is, and this is what I did, and this is how, and they would sell it or give it to that neighbor, and that neighbor would take it down to their home and plant it, and that's how it all started. I mean, it's pretty simple that it would work that way. It takes time, that's all. But my favorite rose, and before my favorite rose, during World War II, yeah, soldiers, sailors, Marines, etc. They did the same thing. They brought back specimens. And rose hips, those are like the little seed pods, were grown in victory gardens to replace the vitamin C found in citrus fruits, because the citrus industry took a hit, if you will, and slowed down a lot of production. And so rose hips were found to be loaded with vitamin C. And so many lives were saved by eating the fruit of a rose. So, you know, who could figure that one out? But my favorite type of rose, and it's just a type, are the mini roses. I love the mini roses because I like all roses, but these are the ones I like to use in landscaping, simply because they're small. They have short stems, but they have more flowers than you can count. They are filled with flowers. And they're smaller flowers. They're not the big hybrid tea type flowers that you find in rose bouquets or anything from our florist, but they're just a riot of color, and they begin to bloom very early in the spring, Aprilish, sometimes maybe even in March you might see a little color, and as the heat comes and the days get warmer and longer, it's very prolific. The flowers are so heavy you can hardly see the foliage, the green leaves.
Hold that thought, because we have a phone call. You're on the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show. What's your question?
Hi. I'm wondering about pruning my rhodies. They are huge. They're 7 feet tall and probably 6 feet across, and they're very thick. Is there something I can do that will thin them out without damaging them?
You know, rhodie is like a weed. You can't hurt them. I have pruned 10-foot rhodies down to 3 feet tall, and they come back and are fuller, more beautiful, more healthy. And no, you can't hurt them. We usually prune after the bloom, and it's probably after the bloom now. And yeah, so the new energy to the plant is going into leaf production. So if you prune them, you can prune them at any height you want. You can thin them as much as you want. You can make them a tree if you want. Just put one, you know, keep one stem and see what happens. Now, they're not going to push new leaves instantaneously. But if you rub your hand down the stem of a rhododendron, down a branch, you'll feel little bumps. They're little tiny bumps. And what those are they're called latent lateral buds. In other words, their sole purpose is if that plant were to be broken or cut off, that would trigger that bump to become a leaf, to become a new branch. And that's what happens. So if you can find those bumps, you prune right above the bump, you know, within a quarter of an inch, and give it some liquid fertilizer and, you know, maybe some B1 or something like that to kind of pump it a little bit. And within a month or two, you'll have all brand new leaves coming out on your rhodies. Now, there's a gentleman standing right next to me who thought I destroyed his rhodies at his home, but his name is Kyle. How are your rhodies looking now, Kyle?
They look really nice.
Thank you. And it's all brand new growth, isn't it?
It is.
And how severely did I cut them?
Let's see. What was the question?
About the rhododendrons, how severely did I cut them?
Oh, you really severe. They had been let go for a few years. And it was way back to maybe 25% of what it looked like when you started.
Yeah, yeah.
And now it looks great.
Good. See, I got a witness right here. That's what you do. So don't be afraid to prune. Just use good tools, sharp. If the stems are big, you'll use a pruning saw. Or if they're smaller branches, you can use a loppers, long-handled loppers with a sharp blade, and you'll get a good clean cut. You want a good clean cut. It'll heal very quickly, and in no time at all, really, in months, you'll see all this brand new growth coming back. Does that answer your question?
And I see that the results, some new ones that I planted that might possibly have those nasty little bugs that chew on the leaves. What do I put on for that?
Well, your best bet is there are several different sprays and treatments that you can use. And your best bet would be to go to the farmer's co-op. And because they have the best selection, I found that will help you in that direction. And what happens on a lot of those critters live in the soil, and they come out of the soil at night, climb up the plant, and chomp on the leaves. And
is there a certain time of the year that they do that?
Yeah, well, almost all year long. So do the treatment as soon as you can. And what you do is just mix this potion that you do choose, mix it with your water, and then just water in around the roots, and you'll kill the eggs and the bugs and any larvae or any of that, and that will certainly reduce it.
Okay. All right, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
All right, 4:54, back in a moment. Mike Winters, Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Final segment with the Commissioner of Dirt.
Yeah, and I was, prior to that phone call, I was talking about mini roses and how good they are in your landscape. And because they are so colorful for at least 8 months of the year, sometimes 9 months of the year, mine actually are still blooming in December before the coldest weather actually hits. And I've got them out in my mama plants, if you will, where I take cuttings from. They're out right along Highway 99, about 6 feet away from the semis that go by every day, and hundreds of them, and all the traffic that goes by there are, I think, 11,000 cars a day. And so they get dusted with heat and dust and road oil and whatever else, but they still continue to bloom. They still grow really well. And they're planted in pure bark mulch, and they've probably been there for, 15 years now. But they're huge and they're beautiful. And we take our cuttings off them every year when we grow new ones. And I know they're tough. I've seen them, because they might get watered once a week in the middle of the summer, maybe, and they bloom till about December. So they really look good as a hedge, if you want one, a small hedge lining your driveway or maybe the front of your yard next to a curb or a sidewalk. They're good. They don't seem to be susceptible to a lot of disease. They don't seem to get black spot or powdery mildew or like some of the larger leafed hybrid tea roses are. And that's why I grow them. That's why I plant them in landscapes, because I know that they're going to look good in the landscape. And there are a whole host of colors you can choose from. Unfortunately, we only have about 3 or 4 colors, and I need to expand my color spectrum so that I can get some different ones. But we have reds, pinks, and yellows, and they really are sharp. And so if you ever come to my nursery, that's the first thing you see as you pull into the parking lot, because they're between my parking lot and Highway 99. And I probably got, maybe 10 of them in there, just kind of spotted around with the rest of the landscape. And you don't have to babysit them. You don't have to, we fertilize them once a year, maybe in the middle of November, and sometimes maybe in the spring if I remember, because we're doing so many other things. And, I got to fertilize the roses, got to fertilize that stuff up front. And again, the watering process is minimal. We try to soak them once a week, at least in the hot part of the summer, and they always look good. So I appreciate you listening. Thank you, and I can bring you more information next week.
And where do people find you?
They find us half a mile south of Winston on Highway 99, and we're right across from the hemp fields and where Birch Blue Fruit Stand used to be. Look for all the green roofs. That's Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist.
All right, back with the Commissioner of Dirt next Wednesday at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN. News time is 5 o'clock.